You are Locked On MLB, your daily podcast on Major League Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On MLB. This is your host, as always, Tommy Stokey. It is Friday, May 4th. I have no Star Wars jokes for you because I don't watch Star Wars. I do watch baseball, though, and we're going to talk baseball with Joe Nocco in segment two. We're going to talk the New York Mets, the surprising National League East, and who he believes is going to win the division. We did try to talk Pujols, and then for some reason we had technical difficulties, so I'll share some of his thoughts on Albert Pujols approaching 3,000 hits, along with my own in segment three. In segment one, we'll take a look at three series that I will be watching this weekend in baseball. What stands out to me, excluding Pujols, because I'm probably not watching that series except for Albert Pujols at bats. So those are our three segments today. Mets and NL East, Albert Pujols third, leading off with the three series that I'm going to watch this week. As a reminder, you can find us on Google Play, you can find us on Spotify, and you can find us on iTunes, and you can check us out at LockedOnMLB.com. And if you are interested in advertising, you can find me at Stokey at LockedOnMLB.com for reasonable rates if you want to reach some baseball fans listening to our podcast. So let's get started. All right, three series that I'm watching this week. I'm going to start out in the West, out here in Arizona. The Diamondbacks and the Astros, and what could be, I mean, the Diamondbacks, I don't know what the exact stat is, but they're facing the Dodgers and the Astros in back-to-back series. It's the first time in a long time, if ever, that a team is facing the World Series teams back-to-back. They took care of business against the Dodgers. I guess they went, what, they split 2-2. First series that they didn't win this year, although they didn't lose it, so maybe that's not exactly taking care of business. But 2-2 against the Dodgers, four-game series. Now they'll host the Astros for three. Chris Medlin will make his 2018 debut and Diamondbacks debut. Remember him with the Braves a couple of years ago, a while ago, I guess it seems. Braves fans are excited to see Medlin back, as well as Johnny Venters down in Tampa Bay. But Medlin will get the shot, filling in for Robbie Ray and Taijuan Walker, who are both out. Matt Cook is going to start on Sunday. Those are the two that are filling in for those guys. Medlin gets the first crack. I'm going to guess if that doesn't work out, they go to Braden Shipley. There's some speculation that they go out and sign Clay Buchholz because of the Boston connection, but Medlin gets the first shot. He gets Garrett Cole tonight, and then Charlie Morton pitches on Saturday for Houston and Justin Verlander on Sunday. So should be a good matchup between two of the better teams, if not the two best teams in baseball. The Astros have to figure out some of their bullpen issues. Haven't been able to score or hadn't scored against the Yankees, at least those first two games. So we'll see what their offense looks like out here in the humidor at Chase Field. Second series, keep an eye on the Cubs and the Cardinals. There's a story in a Chicago newspaper today, and Cubs Twitter isn't taking very well to it. It was sort of suggesting that the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry isn't the same because the Cubs are winning, and that it's only a heated rivalry when the Cubs are losing. I think that's wrong. I think that standpoint coming from, you could take that coming from any side of a rivalry where the team, where one team is dominating the other or one team is better than the other. That side is always going to feel like, okay, this is less of a rivalry because the team's not as good. But I don't think that's the case, because I think it's just switched where the Cardinals maybe hate the Cubs a lot more than the Cubs hate the Cardinals, because the Cubs have had more success recently. The Cardinals are looking up to the Cubs the last couple of years. Their future is not as bright on paper, but I don't think that there's anything missing. I think this is ultimately good for any rivalry, that there's not just one team dominating all the time. So now that the Cubs are good, you're getting a different taste of it. You're seeing more and more Cardinals fans care about what the Cubs are doing. They have more comments about what the Cubs are doing, and that's always fun to see. Growing up a Cubs fan and growing up in Chicago, I know what the other side of it's like, where Cubs fans hate everything that the Cardinals do. I think it's just more the Cubs have bigger goals than just beating the Cardinals, where before when the Cubs were terrible, it's, well, if we beat the Cardinals, that's okay. I don't think that takes away from the rivalry. It just is a little bit different. So, no, I don't think the rivalry is worse because the Cubs are better. I think it's just different. And then the third series, I think, is going to be a good one. Phillies and Nationals. The Nationals will send Gio Gonzalez, Tanner Roark, and Max Scherzer to the mound, whereas the Phillies will counter with Nick Pivetta, Vince Velasquez, and Jake Arrieta. That'll be a good Sunday matchup, Arrieta versus Scherzer. I'm sure we'll get a lot of talk about, hey, remember when in the offseason the Nationals were considering Jake Arrieta? I don't know that that was ever necessarily the case, but that'll be a good matchup on Sunday. You have two teams in the NL East who are kind of, they're close, but the Phillies are off to a better start than expected, and the Nationals are off to a worse start than expected. So be interesting to see what happens there. As the Nationals get healthy, they will have have to get climbing up those rankings, which we'll talk about here in a minute. We're going to bring in Joe Nocco to talk New York Mets. We're going to talk National League East. He's going to give his prediction, which is kind of a bold one, on who he thinks is the best team in the National League East and who is going to win the division. It's not the Mets. It's not the Nationals. And he's going to talk about why he's not worried about the Nationals necessarily, or why they don't necessarily scare him if you're the Mets. We talk Mets catching and how big of a priority that should be. We look at Matt Harvey and how fans should treat and react to Matt Harvey, and what Matt Harvey's future looks like in New York, if he even has one. And then we look at the lineup, we look at the recent sweep to the Mets, and just where they stand with a tough May coming up. So here's Joe Nocco, and then in segment three, we will get to Albert Pujols. All right, we're now joined by professional Mets watcher, Joe Nocco. Joe, your Mets are coming off a sweep at home at the hands of the Atlanta Braves. They scored two runs in three games, and they allowed 21. What is the biggest problem facing the Mets right now?
Well, the bright side of that situation, if there is any, is that it's, you know, a few days into May. So there's not yet time to panic. However, pretty much everything about that series calls for some sort of panic. Nobody's hitting really well. Cespedes got hot, so that's, you know, as backwards as it gets at the moment. But nobody's hitting. The starting pitching is iffy at best. What once looked like a strong bullpen is now led by two starters, neither of which is named Matt Harvey. And everything appears to be ready to head in the opposite direction of what we saw in April, which obviously is not a good sign. But however, if you're going to attempt to be optimistic somehow, it's early May, and it shouldn't be too telling yet.
As far as the Braves go, I mean, they're kind of one of the talks in baseball as a surprising team, as a young team with all this talent that's going to be around for a while. But as far as this year goes, how concerned should the Mets be, or how concerned are you when it comes to the Atlanta Braves?
Very, because on today, the Atlanta Braves are the best team in the National League East, and I really don't think it's close. The Nationals are a solid team, but I'm not really too impressed by them. The bullpen looks decent and is rested right now, but that can be shaky, as we've seen in the past, even with Madsen, Doolittle, and all those, DeKinsler, all those guys. The Marlins are absolutely terrible. They won't win more than, you know, if they come anywhere near winning 70 games, that would be, like, maybe one of the biggest surprises in baseball. The Phillies and the Mets, I feel, are very similar. The starting pitching on both teams could be, you know, if they're going on all cylinders, the starting pitching can impress at times. You know, the Phillies have Arrieta now. Nola is up and coming. He's good. But neither of those offensive lineups really scare me. If they're all working together and everyone's hot, any team in baseball can be good. They're all major league players. But neither of those teams impress me offensively, where the Braves right now are kind of doing what the Mets did in April for a little while there. The starting pitching looks, you know, above average. And I think the Braves have the best offensive lineup in the National League East right now, and I don't think that's going to change through the end of the season. Top to bottom, they're stacked. Do I think that starting pitching is going to hold up? Probably not. But it may not be needed. You know, not much may be needed from them if that lineup is going to produce runs like they did against the Mets. You know, the last 2 days of the series, they outscored them, 18-0. So, you know, you could have gave up 10 runs and still outscored them by 8. So, I think I would go out on a limb and say the Braves will win the National League East this year, competing in the postseason in a pretty deep National League, though I don't really see any of these five teams from the National League East going very far.
Wow, May 4th, and you think the Braves are going to win the division. I don't know that we saw that one coming. But let's talk about the Nationals, because that's the team that I think everyone assumed was going to win the division, run away with the division, and right now they're in fourth. Why aren't you all that concerned with them? Because on paper, especially when they get Murphy and Rendon back, I guess everyone assumes that they'll figure it out and end up at the top, but you're not buying it.
I mean, Tanner Roark, Jeremy Hellickson, Gio Gonzalez. I mean, Gio Gonzalez obviously been a level above those other two, but I don't see them, you know, as automatic wins, you know, like Scherzer and Strasburg. Regular season Strasburg is different. Let's start there. He's good in the regular season. That's no problem. So Scherzer and Strasburg, you assume, you know, every time they take the mound, you know, 85% of the time they take the mound, you're looking, you know, for a win there. So where the other three, they've been impressive so far, but they're all beatable. And if one of them goes down, you're in even deeper water. The bullpen, not tremendous. Has some names, but very, very beatable. And then the lineup without Rendon, Murphy's in a contract year, I believe. Harper, obviously, a contract year. First-year manager, I don't know. I just don't see it all being as dominant as usual. They've looked pretty pedestrian thus far. And they're on, I want to say, a five-game winning streak, and they're just at 500. So not tremendously impressive so far, but I don't think much is going to change, even though it's early.
The Mets are still 17-12, so as much as the sky is falling after the sweep to the Braves, they are still in second place in the division, still in a spot most teams would like to be in. That being said, looking at their May schedule, they've got three at the Reds, three against the Marlins, and everybody else is a team that you can consider playoff contenders, depending on how you feel about the Phillies. So what do you need to see from them this month to decide whether or not they're for real or not?
If they can come away with some wins outside of the National League East, because the National League East will be tough. Divisional opponents are always tough, even if it's the Phillies and the Marlins and, you know, a slumping Nationals team or a pedestrian Nationals team, I should say. Divisional games are always tough. You know, people, for example, like the Cubs, they'll have a tough series against the Reds, and the Reds will be terrible, and they'll look at it all. They can't even beat the Reds. But it's a divisional matchup. Everyone comes to play, and there's a little more on the line. So there'll be more of those games down the road that the Mets can make up, you know, if they falter a little bit now. But they need to come away with wins against the Rockies. I think they play the Cubs at the end of the month or early June. So they need to come away with some wins and some quality outings to show they can hang with the rest of the National League, because those National League East games are made, they can be made up. A few wins here and there. Outside of the Braves, they've done pretty well against the division this year. I think they're undefeated against the Phillies and the Marlins, and then they lost two to the Nationals. I think five of, or six of their, you know, 12 losses are against the Braves. So those will come at the end. If need be, they'll still be there to come at the end, I should say. But yeah, the Rockies, the Cubs, you know, even the Reds. I mean, even a non-divisional opponent, show you could beat them. You won't see them many times. The starting pitching obviously has to come into play a little bit, because one starter that you can, you know, that's faltering a little bit and can come and go with maybe a reliever or Corey Oswalt from the minors is not problematic. But when Matz, Wheeler, Harvey, and Vargas are all struggling, not tremendous.
Yeah, they got the out of division. They've got the two against the Blue Jays. They've got three at home against the Diamondbacks, four at Milwaukee, and then they end the month and going into next month with the Cubs. But I'm looking at the schedule, and I think you got to get tickets to all three games of this Diamondback series because Free Shirt Friday on the 18th, Mr. Met Star Wars bobblehead on the 19th, and then a Mets plastic bat on the 20th. Those are three pretty good giveaways.
Well, you got the Cesar's Gnome tomorrow, too. I will be in attendance, actually, for this for them against the Mets against the Rockies. I think Matt is pitching. See how he rebounds. He had some back stiffness, which you never know what the deal is with him. He's always banged up. But he has impressed at times, not so much this year, obviously. But Matt has shown that he's got some stuff, and it just kind of looks super plain right now, and I don't think that's a very good sign. So any injury that comes his way is not going to help the cause. So we'll see how he attempts to rebound against a Rockies team that maybe not hitting, you know, tremendous right. Actually, better on the road, I think, than home, if I'm correct. But a Rockies team that's always dangerous. Even sans an injured LeMahieu, you know, they're going to hit mats all over the field. If I had to predict that.
Let's look at the catching position. And once Darnold and Plawecki went down, it was kind of the worst kept secret. It wasn't a secret that the Mets needed to upgrade at catcher. They have yet to do so. So how big of a priority should that be, while also considering that if you're competing in June and July, you're also whatever trade chips you might use at catcher, whatever money you might use at catcher, that could also be used that's for something else down the road. So where should they be prioritizing the catcher position right now?
Well, I think an even worse kept secret is that the Mets were not going to beat you with their catchers offensively this year. They started the year with Plawecki and Darnold, who, not, you know, have not proven a single thing thus far into their, you know, brief-ish major league tenure. So I don't think that's where they were going to beat you. You know, I don't think that was in the cards. However, could they use an upgrade, generally speaking, offensively? Yes. And who are you going to replace other than, you know, a catcher right now? So it is important for the sake of boosting the offensive production. Like a Realmuto, you know, everyone likes to talk about. He's obviously a very good, you know, hits for average. Can hit you a couple home runs here and there. Will drive in some runs. Doesn't have to necessarily bat, you know, 8, 7, 8, 9. You know, so if everyone else is slumping or everyone else is having a rough time, he can move around the batting order. So that would be ideal. Obviously, you got to give something up to get there. But if you're in win mode now, there's, you know, you got to part with some prospects if that's what's going to happen. But like I said, they weren't going to beat you with the catcher position anyway. But they just need a boost generally, and no one else is going to come off the field. So the catcher position has to be, you know, a point of concern going forward.
This week on Wednesday, I kind of went on a rant because I think it was kind of disgusting how it was handled with Matt Harvey in the media, and how the story of going to Beverly Hills for the night and coming back, you know, was he stumbling? Was he sober? The original story had two different things, and I could not stand how that story was covered and aggregated. With that being said, it's also kind of disgusting how he is actually pitching. So, in terms of just pitching, what do the Mets do with Matt Harvey?
Let him mop up some games until he shows that he can do something else. Because everyone's clamoring. This is why I hate Twitter. I love Twitter because, you know, good things can come from it. But I hate Twitter because everyone thinks they're a baseball expert when the season starts. And everyone's clamoring, oh, trade him. What are you going to trade him for? He has, like, a 10 ERA, you know what I mean? Like, he's shown absolutely nothing, and no one is going to give up anything for him. So, you know, you're not going to designate him for assignment. That's another one. Everyone, DFA. You're not going to designate him for assignment. You need pitchers in the bullpen to come into games like he did yesterday and do that. If that's what it's come to, that's what it's come to. However, if he starts pitching well, you know, and he finds his stride, then he's an asset again. But until then, you kind of just got to hold on to him. Now, do I think he makes it through the end of the season? It's about 50-50 right now, only because around that trade deadline and then the second, you know, waiver deadline, teams get desperate, teams need some help back into the bullpen starter, whatever, what have you. And you may be able to get a little something for him. Will he be back next season unless he wants to pitch for free? No.
So he's given up 6 runs in his last 4 innings. I think most of that came his last time out I know he gave up, what, a three-run homer to Ozzie Albies, but he's only struck – only has one strikeout compared to four walks, so that has to be concerning. When it comes to Matt Harvey, as a fan, how should Mets fans be treating him or receiving him? Because a couple of years ago, he was the Dark Knight. He was the best thing that the Mets had. He was pitching in the World Series going into the ninth, and even though his doctors or whoever said, don't throw after Tommy John, you shouldn't be throwing these innings, he came out and did. And now he is getting booed off the mound. He is not helping the team win. And I don't remember the last time we've seen something like this, where someone has gone from hero to zero so quickly. So, in your opinion, how should fans be treating somebody who 2 years ago was the hero, but now he is what he is?
Well, first and foremost, with the off-the-field stuff, he doesn't really help himself. Whether he was drinking or not drinking or partying or not partying, whatever, he obviously knows what's going to come from that if he's in public. It's, you know what I mean? It wasn't like he was like hiding and doing. He's in public. People are going to see it, you know. So the fact that he just kind of did that anyway, knowing what the repercussions will be and forcing people to comment on it and stuff, just kind of adds to the whole notion that, you know, he doesn't seem like a team player. You know, are we all in that clubhouse every single day? No. But from the outside looking in, he doesn't really help his own case, which I think frustrates some people, and rightfully so. What frustrates me, though, is that on the field, he refuses to adapt. He threw, you know, like, you know, every take, I take it in August 2013, I'm pretty sure his curveball, slider, and fastball average velocity led the league in all three categories, which he's not the same pitcher. That doesn't take an expert to see that. His velocity is down like almost like 10 miles an hour, which is obviously not ideal, but there's a million pitchers over time that have shown that either at the back end of their career or just in generally that they have other stuff that they can use besides trying to blow people away. And even if he'll have, you know, at this point, like, sometimes it looks like he, like, switches that thought on, and he does throw off speed and change-ups and things of that nature, and he'll get, like, an 0-2 count and then switch it back off and just hang a fastball over the plate, and it'll go 500 feet. So I don't really know what to make of him at this moment, because I don't think it's only a one-sided deal to where, you know, people want him out. I don't think he really wants to be there either at this point. But can you really blame him? I mean...
Yeah, my argument for the going out thing is if baseball players never went out, they drive themselves nuts with 162 games and 180 days or whatever it is. And those guys need to have life away from the field. At the same time, I understand that when you're Matt Harvey and you've done the things that you've done, you have to pick and choose your spots a little bit. But the point is, none of it would matter if he would just pitch well, and he's not. So. We'll
right,
see.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I agree that's a non-story. He didn't do anything wrong. It's just that I feel like he's, like, when he doesn't want to talk to the media and stuff, and then, like, a week later, which is fine, you don't have to talk to the media, but a week later, then he'll go and do that. If it was 2 months later, you know, same circumstance, even if he's not pitching well, probably a non-story. So, I don't know. He kind of brings it upon himself sometimes, but, like, even non-stories are... our story, that's a New York thing, and he seems to like, the, you know, maybe he doesn't want to, you know, stick around in this Mets team much longer, but he definitely likes the atmosphere of the city in New York and pitching in New York, and these are things that come along with it. So if you want to do that and be a big shot, you kind of got to, you know, try your losses.
Pitch like one. Thanks to Joe once again for joining us to talk Mets, and feel bad that we brought him on to talk coming off of a sweep at the hands of the Atlanta Braves at home, but... He's a team player. I talked with Joe. I asked him about Albert Pujols and his perspective on Pujols as he comes up on 3,000 hits likely this weekend, and technical difficulties that didn't work out, technical difficulties, or I'm just stupid and didn't know how to record it. Regardless, I don't have it. But I thought he brought up a good point, and I led in with this, saying, you know, I grew up a Cubs fan. I grew up in Chicago suburb, and to me, Albert Pujols was the best hitter of my generation or of my youth. You couldn't pitch to him. Everything in the strike zone was a hit or seemed like a hit or a home run or something. If you didn't throw him a strike, he wasn't going to swing and he was going to take first base. And so as the Cardinals always beat up on the Cubs, Albert Pujols was the best player in baseball. He was the best hitter and is going to be remembered as one of the best hitters of at least my generation. Part of that isn't fair because he plays with Mike Trout, who is going to go down as perhaps or probably the best player ever. And so that's tough. And it's tough because we're in the moment and Albert Pujols is making a ton of money and he's not producing the way that he was. But Joe brought up a good point, and that's if you know, players get old and we have to grade them on a different scale. That if we expect Pujols at 38, at his listed age of 38, to be what he was at his listed age of 30, I mean, we're crazy. And, you know, you look at his numbers where last year, I mean, his defense has been declining for a while and his foot speed isn't there of any kind and he's hobbling around the bases and he's got a negative 1.8 WAR last year and we want to write about this massive decline of Pujols and how he's weighing down the Angels. I mean, first of all, it's not his fault, and this is usually always my stance on a bad contract. It's not his fault that he got offered a ton of money and took it. It's not his fault that the Angels gave him whatever that contract is and that he's making $25, $26 million this year and not performing. No one's going to turn that money down. It's not like he's going to say, oh, I better get this back because I'm not performing. That's not how it works. So you earn that money, and it's not his fault if he's not performing that to what that's worth. But you look at some of his numbers, and Joe pointed these out. In 2015, he hit 40 home runs, hit 31 home runs in 2016, and even 2017 when, you know, a .241 batting average, .286 on base, and a .672 OPS is not very good, obviously. He's not walking, but he still hit 23 home runs and drove in 101 runs. I know the RBI stat is flawed, but at 37 years old, 23 home runs, 101 driven in, that's not terrible. At 36, 31 home runs, driving in 119 this year. Still not walking, only three walks, only a .271 on base. Is slugging .448, so that's better than what he's been. But I think it's going to get worse. I think we're going to celebrate him now for what he is, or for what he has been, getting to this number of 3,000 and this milestone. But I'm afraid that as the season goes on, as the Angels keep competing and stay in the thick of a division race, a playoff race, and Pujols, if he's not producing at a certain level, I think it's going to get worse and he's going to get crushed. And that's one of the sad parts to see. And I wrote just a little short story on Ichiro this morning about how he kind of his exit was at the perfect time for the Mariners because fans were about to turn on him, I think, because of the Mariners keeping him on that team and occupying that spot. I would hate to see people turn on Pujols because of this, or because if he is struggling at all. But I think we have to remember that he's 38, listed, and he's not going to be the same player that he was at 30, and that was always going to be a bad contract, always going to be a contract that was never going to be lived up to. And so whose fault is that? I don't think it's Pujols' fault. I'm going to remember Albert Pujols as the greatest hitter of my youth as I grew up and one of the best hitters of all time from, you know, whether it's a batting average standpoint, a home run standpoint, an on-base percentage standpoint. You're going to decline at some point. You're going to get old at some point, and that's happened for Pujols, but that won't change the way that I think about him, and I think eventually it'll get to a point where we remember that stuff. But I'm afraid of what's going to happen in the near future, in the future after he gets to 3,000 and we focus on what he is now as opposed to what people expect him to be. So that'll do it for us today. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. Check us out on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and at LockedOnMLB.com.